Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Raisin Bran? You got to put Raisin Bran up there. Everybody knows it.
It's Mike Shope.
Listen, get your own stupid old dying person team and choose your own cereals.
And the Bulldog.
I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves.
That cereal is soggy. You reach into the fridge for the milk and open the lid on the milk to pour it in there, and that crap is already soggy.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds.
That's a terrible.
That's a problem for a cereal.
A huge problem.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
New uniforms, at least for apparently two games this season. The top topic of the day. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here will take a detour from that for the next little while and chat with the author. Bulldog, any guesses? The author of Aaron Schatz's FTN Football Almanac. Correct. Aaron Schatz with us on the Wester Hotline. I liked that you were on with Steve Bennett the other day, Aaron, in his podcast. Steve is a local guy. Sportscasters, I believe, is the name of it. And hopefully you had a good experience.
Yeah, I do him every year, man. I've been doing with him since early in the book days, like 15 years ago or something.
Awesome. Good.
Very good. What's new and exciting about this year's edition, other than all new information?
Mostly the all new information. It's, you know, the usual chapters on every team, all kinds of advanced stats, all kinds of write-ups, analysis of what teams are going to do this year. The big change this year is we ranked nickelbacks separately from outside cornerbacks, because there's all these players now like who are called safeties, but they're really nickel corners, and then other guys are cornerbacks, but they're really different nickel corners. So we sort of combined all those guys into one category and looked at things that way, which we think is a more accurate way to look at it.
And the Bills had a good one for a long time in Taron Johnson, who has since been traded to the Raiders. I mean, maybe it was time. It's interesting about the Bills' defense. And we really haven't spent a ton of time on this because, you know, gone is gone, I guess, maybe. But they have maybe a half dozen defensive veterans who, like, just did not sign anywhere. Maybe it's not that many anymore. But Milano and Trey White and Bosa. And Taron Johnson was going to be released before they made a deal with the Raiders for, like, a seventh-round pick or something just after that. So, I mean, what about the Bills defensively for you, Aaron, as a team in transition?
We like the Bills' defense to rebound a little bit this year. We think a couple of things. First of all, it's just general rebounding, right? They were a good defense until last year. They were really bad on third downs, really, really bad on third downs, 30th in the league. So it's much more likely that they play a lot closer to what they did on the first two downs, which is like 14th. And then they added some guys, right? Bradley Chubb, Gardner Johnson, rookies like T.J. Parker. You know, it looks like they added some talent and didn't necessarily, like you said, the guys who are gone didn't really get signed by other teams. So did they lose a lot? Not as much as we think that they added. So we like the defense to rebound a bit.
Yeah, you mentioned Chubb there, Aaron. When I get asked about this, you know, the new defense in general and maybe pass rush specifically is where I want to go here, I've thought that maybe the new scheme generates more pass rush overall for them, more aggressive, more blitzing, and maybe that gets them good results, because I don't really think, even with Bradley Chubb here, that they have a guy. You know, like, the Bills have been searching for a guy since they signed Von Miller, or really even before that when they drafted Gregory Rousseau and Boogie Basham in the draft right after their first AFC title game loss to Kansas City, and still haven't found it. But I wonder what you think of the idea that the scheme could just generate more pressure as opposed to just having some dude with his hair on fire.
Here's the shock I'm going to give you. The Bills have been generating pressure for years. We have them fifth in pressure rate last year. Now, maybe they're doing it more through scheme, and now it's a different scheme. So maybe, you know, Leonard does it differently than McDermott did it. But, they have actually had reasonable pressure. They've been average on sacks and good on pressure rate, despite the fact that they haven't had the guy.
Is there a distinction between, for you, that's important for you, between pressures and sacks or hits? Or, like, what's the most useful way of tracking this?
Well, sacks are the best, right? I mean, you want to sack the quarterback. But in general, pressure will be more consistent from year to year than sacks will. You know, the times you almost get to the quarterback, don't quite get there. And then the next year, a couple of those will turn into sacks. Or if you get the quarterback a lot more than you would think you would, then a couple of years, you know, the next year, a couple of them, you'll just barely miss them. So pressure is usually a better way to predict the future than just raw sacks.
Mm-hmm. 36 sacks, I think it was, last year for the Bills defense. I'm not sure where that would have ranked them, but maybe, like you're saying, it was better than we thought.
About middle of the pack.
Middle of the pack, okay.
While we're on defense, Aaron, how about the secondary? You mentioned, I don't know, did you mention Gardner Johnson? Yeah, you did. Okay, yep. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I didn't, you know, have that wrong. Cole Bishop seemed to be coming last year. We'll see maybe as soon as this year what his ceiling is. But they're a long way from Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer holding down the back end. But it feels like maybe with Gardner Johnson here paired with, again, sort of maybe a breaking through candidate in Cole Bishop, that they're back on track to having a safety tandem that can really be counted on.
Yeah, I will say people in Cincinnati are not high on Geno Stone. They were happy to see him gone, so you probably don't want him to be playing a lot. I'm still a big Benford fan. I still think he's one of the top corners in the league. Now, it's interesting. He's more of a zone corner, and I don't know if they want to play more man with Leonard as the defensive coordinator, so that might be interesting. But, you know, at safety, yeah, they need Bishop.
We lose Aaron?
Sounds like we did, yeah.
It happened just when I hit a button.
Uh-oh,
and so it felt like maybe I did something.
Yeah, but probably wasn't it, but I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
It's something coincides with you having, you know, hit a button. Yeah. Aaron's back.
All right, Aaron.
I'm here. Hello.
We lost you for a second there. You were talking about the safety tandem.
Yeah, I was saying, you know, if Bishop can take a step forward and C.J. Gardner-Johnson doesn't tick off his teammates, then they'll be in reasonable shape.
I have a question about defensive back play, but it isn't about the Bills. How statistically improbable is it to go an entire 17-game season without a single interception as a team like the Jets did?
Absurd.
Okay.
Absurd. In general, 20% of your passes defensed will turn into interceptions. It's not completely random the way fumble recovery is, right? There is such a thing as ball skills. Some guys just, you know, do have ball skills, pick off more passes. But in general, we would have expected the Jets last year to pick off between 10 and 12 passes, and instead they ended up with zero. It is ridiculously absurd.
Well, what they need is a coach who played DB. That's what they need to figure out.
Yeah.
Get somebody who knows how to do this in there.
If only they could find one of those.
Right. Aaron Glenn. All right. So when you think about, from your analysis, Aaron, the Bills overall, is there anything, I mean, we've talked about a particular stat already in pressures, and maybe there was a misconception about that. What else, if there is anything else, might people, to your ears, tend to maybe get a little bit wrong about the Bills?
I think people outside of Buffalo don't understand how good their offensive line has been and how good the running game has been and how important that's been to the offense. The people who are listening to my voice right now understand that. But the people who are not watching the Bills all the time, I think, you know, nationally, that's not necessarily as well known. I don't think people realize, you know, how good Dawkins is, for example.
Yeah, and they've also been very healthy.
Right.
Last year, I know, as we went to training camp, our Sal Capaccio would come on and point out that not only, not just healthy, but, you know, consistency over years, not only do they have all their starters back, but they even have all their backups back. Going into last season, this year they lost David Edwards and maybe a backup or two as well that I'm not thinking of right now. But they've go ahead.
We track this thing called adjusted games lost. The Bills have been a top three team in lowest adjusted games lost on offense for five straight years.
Wow.
But they were 29th on defense. So they lost a ton of games to injuries on defense last year, but like none on offense.
And that showed. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
It certainly was a talking point later on in the season that happened.
Would you anticipate, Aaron, that the offensive line continues to be a strength, even though there's going to be a new left guard? Mike mentions Edwards leaving, Alec Anderson, veteran Austin Corbett. These are people who are expected to compete for that job. But the rest is still all the same.
Yeah, I don't think those guys are considered to be as good as Edwards. But in general, I think, you know, offensive line continuity is important, but changing one guy is not a huge big deal. What you don't want to do is change like four guys at a time, and nobody's worked together before. But like you said, the rest of them have worked together before, and I don't see any reason to see the rest of them decline, you know, based on, you know, compared to last year.
Are you putting a win total on this team, Aaron, or all teams?
We do a projected mean wins. You know, we project the season, whatever, 50,000 times, and the average number of wins that we come out with, because, you know, everything when you project the NFL, it's the hardest sport to predict. So it's always, you know, a range of possibilities. But we end up with the Bills at 10.0 wins, which is near the top of the league. I think it might be second in the AFC behind Houston. So we definitely like them this year. I mean, it helps that they're not going to be competing against a team with, like, the easiest schedule in 30 years. you know, that'll make things a little bit better for them.
Interesting how, I think, the Bills and Patriots' schedules broke down this year. I mean, the Bills' schedule looks pretty beastly. And you have the Dolphins and the Jets. That's four of your games. They go to Vegas once. The other 12 are kind of all, like, I mean, what's the next softest game on their schedule? At Minnesota, maybe some game like that, a Monday night. But the Bills get Houston, Baltimore, and the Rams. And the Patriots get Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, and Seattle, which I'm not sure that's a lot different. I mean, Pittsburgh winning the AFC North there is, I guess, a break on paper anyway to the Patriots. That's their opener, I think. Or no, Seattle's their opener. Maybe
Seattle
that's their second
is their
game.
Opener.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Based on our projections, there's definitely a difference between Pittsburgh and Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, there's not much of a difference between those schedules. And we end up with the Bills with the number 11 projected schedule and the Patriots 14th. Yeah, the schedules aren't as hard as you think they are because they have all those games with the Jets and Dolphins on them.
11th easiest or 11th hardest?
11th hardest.
Okay. So what do you see from New England here? We've talked about this with three of us maybe a couple of months ago, but consensus, whether that's by the betting numbers or just other conversations we've had, thinking of Sam Monson last week and other experts who come on, kind of give New England, like, you know, it's maybe not a coin flip, but like last year, for the most part, really close to the Bills.
Yeah, we have them really close too. We have the Bills at 10.0 and the Patriots at 9.6. So I think the Patriots are going to be a better team that looks worse because of the schedule change. On offense, they'll probably regress a little bit just because they were so good last year. Drake May was so good last year. But I think their defense will improve. There's reasons to believe, you know, that they've added some more defensive guys and that, you know, they should the way that they were blitzing last year, it's the second year with the same defensive coordinator. Usually you take a little bit of a step forward your second year with the system. So we like their defense to be better and their offense a little worse. The whole team probably slightly better, but it'll look worse. And, yeah, those two teams are pretty neck and neck in a division that's really just two teams. You can see a, like, 1 in 200 chance where Geno Smith gets his groove back and the Jets have added a bunch of reasonable veterans on defense and suddenly they go, like, 9-8. But that's about the highest. It's like a 1 in 200 chance.
Family members and I, a few weeks ago, got together and pooled some money and built 10 eight division winner parlays, right? So you just have to all eight. And I was with my nephew Saturday, and we were talking about this and ran through a few of them. And I remember the conversation because, you know, we did a few that were pretty chalky. And then, you know, people are drinking and hey, let's get the Titans in there. Or let's get, and we had one where we wanted to decide the Jets or the Dolphins. And the group said the Dolphins. I have a tougher time, maybe a much tougher time seeing Miami.
Me too.
Shock the world, so to speak, than the Jets.
It just feels like the Jets are trying more because they went out and signed all these reasonable veterans on defense and because there's no way they're going to have that few takeaways again. So their defense should be respectable. So, like, I mean, there is a chance that Geno Smith gets his groove back. It's just really unlikely because of his age. So, yeah, I would choose the Jets if I had to choose between those two. But it's fairly likely that those are two of the five or six worst teams in the league.
Yeah. I want to skip right back to the Patriots just for a moment and just ask you about A.J. Brown and what kind of impact you anticipate him having with New England, Aaron.
Yeah, he's really good still. I think everybody feels like he's really good still, that if his numbers dropped a little bit, it was because of the problems they had with the offense in Philadelphia. He still scores tremendously high in ESPN's receiver metrics that are based on the next-gen tracking. He gets open on all kinds of routes, inside, outside, deep, doesn't matter. Catches the ball well. Yards after the catch, basically everything. I know there's a little bit of worry about his knee, but the team doesn't seem to be too worried about it. So it's a really – it's a great addition. Between that and Romeo Dobbs, fantastic additions to their offense. And then don't sleep on Elijah Vera Tucker, the new guard that they got from the Jets. He's fairly well-regarded, except he just can't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. But if he can stay healthy, that's a nice upgrade for their offensive line.
Aaron, whether or not this is – mostly a statistics-based answer or not. Just curious for your perspective on the AFC quarterback landscape now, where we've for a few years had the relatively short conversation: Allen, Jackson, Mahomes, Burrow. All right, and now you have a landscape where there are at least that many names. You know, twice as many as guys like that that you mentioned may already barely missed out on the MVP. Last year. How do you look at it? Allen is 30 now. They all have gotten a little bit older. Mahomes with the injury. Burrow's been hurt. Is it a turning point in this or not yet?
We'll have to see what happens with Mahomes. I have a feeling that he can't do some of the crazy Mahomes things, but I think he'll still play pretty well. To me, it's only two guys in the AFC that are challenging those four. One is Herbert. And I'm not as down on Herbert as some of my writers are, but you do kind of want to see him finally do it. And I know people feel like with Mike McDaniel as his offensive coordinator, he's going to finally have a great season. But, like, let's see it before we crown the guy. And then with May, you know, it's going to be harder on him this year. There's no question about it. There'll be a little bit of regression otherwise. But, you know, if he has another year where he's a top six or seven quarterback, then he absolutely breaks into the discussion.
Yeah. Speaking of quarterbacks who need to break through, I know, and you've already referenced Houston being, you know, having a higher total than the Bills. And I know from talking to you a few months ago that your numbers really like the Texans. How about Stroud within all of that? Because it seems like he took on a lot of water late last year.
Yes, in the playoffs. But in the regular season, C.J. Stroud was 11th in passing DVOA. I know that's crazy, right? It sounds nuts. The team stats got dragged down a little bit by the Davis Mills, even though Davis Mills won those games. But Stroud was actually reasonably good during the regular season and then horrible in the playoffs. But, you know, I believe in general, professional athletes, psychology, these guys have a lot of confidence. And I just can't see Stroud going out there this year and going, well, I sucked in the playoffs, so my career's over. I guess I'm going to be terrible from now on. Like, he's going to go out there and be like, I was good in the regular season. I will now prove everybody wrong. And he's got a running game now and a little bit of a better offensive line. And I think that their offense is actually going to be above average this year.
Looking or thinking about the betting markets, the Rams are like the clear-cut Super Bowl favorite now. Last I looked, it was plus 550, and then the Bills and another team or two were second, like plus 1,000. So a pretty good gap there for a team that did not even make the Super Bowl as good as they were last year. Do you think it's warranted, Aaron?
Our numbers still have Seattle slightly ahead. I would put the Rams slightly ahead myself, but not that much ahead. I still think Seattle is going to be really good. Again, now if the Rams sign Aaron Donald again, if he comes out of retirement, I mean they're clear super favorites. I agree with them being favorites, but I guess I would just put other teams, Seattle and Houston, I'd put a little closer to them.
Who's your favorite long shot? Somebody in a division that is not being talked about?
Golly, I guess I feel like people don't realize how good Indianapolis was in the first half of the season. Okay. And I don't know what's going to happen with Daniel Jones and his ankle. And I don't know if their whole offense is going to fall apart. But they were fifth in DVOA for the whole season, even after losing Jones for four or five games. I don't remember exactly how many games it was. Like, they are a competitor. The problem with the AFC is that the bad teams are so bad that there's like 10 teams that are good enough to make the playoffs, and only seven of them make the playoffs. The thing about the NFL this year is there are like 20 above average teams, not 16. It's just the bad teams are so bad that they drag the average down.
Arizona's at the top of that list, right? I mean, they're an underdog in every game on the preseason lines.
I think Arizona is a little bit better than people realize. Okay. I think they're more like the 28th best team in the league, not the 32nd best team. I realize that's damning with faint praise, but for people who like to put money on these things, some books have them on an over-under of 3.5 wins. I know they went 3-14 last year, but they were the most injured team in the league. 3.5 is really, really low, really low. And even if they lose all their division games, all they have to do is win 4 out of 11 of their other games, and they beat that.
I can't bring myself to draft the rookie, Love. Just thinking about, same with Achane, kind of. It's a little bit risky because they both might. I mean, Achane's been great. But
yeah, I've asked Jancy on the phone, and he agrees with you about that.
Right. Like, just if he's going to get hit behind the line of scrimmage on 2 out of 3 plays, what am I going to get out of Jeremiah Love? So
yeah, I mean, I think that that their offensive line is better than what Vegas had last year. But if you're the opponent, you're putting 8 guys in the box like constantly, not worried that Brissett is going to burn you, and it's going to be tough sledding for him. I mean, he'll put up the numbers just because he'll get up so many carries. But I think at the end of the year, we're going to say, oh, that was a disappointing season.
Yeah.
Aaron, before you go, I wanted to ask you about the Bengals, because you've been on my mind when I make a certain point about them, how, it's been very easy and correct to say that their defense is really holding them back. There's only so much Burrow, Chase, and Higgins and that offense can do. How do you feel about them going into the season on that side of the ball? Because I remember from maybe even the first conversations I recall ever having with you years ago about how volatile defense can be. More so, if you're excellent, it doesn't mean you're going to be excellent year over year. But wouldn't the same maybe apply to if it's been bad? How about the Bengals?
Yeah, absolutely apply. Like, if you look in the Almanac, which is, the book that we put out, the preseason book, which is out now, if you look at it, you'll notice that the range of possible defensive values is smaller than the range of possible offensive values, because the average of the possibilities is going to be closer to average because it's harder to predict defense. And so, like, we don't think Cincinnati's going to have a good defense, but it's probable that they're going to have a better defense than they did certainly in the first half of last year. And their offense should be very, very good. They have Burrow for all 17 games, and they have the easiest projected schedule in the league right now.
Yeah, favored in 15 out of 17, I think the number is. Aaron Schatz with us, FTN Fantasy. The Almanac that you just mentioned again is out. What's the best way for you to have our listeners buy it?
Yeah, FTNFantasy.com/almanac, and there is a sample chapter there. So if you want to see what the Almanac is all about, you can read about the Indianapolis Colts and what we think about them. And, of course, there's also all the fantasy projections in there and the comments on all the skill position players. And you can also get it at Amazon. Just search for FTN Football Almanac 2026.
Also, FTN Fantasy has a fun fantasy simulation game Where
yes, we have the new fantasy simulator where you get to pick a fantasy team. It gives you teams to pick, and then you have to pick the players to try to have a perfect fantasy season.
I went out in the first round of the playoffs. I got stuck with Travis Kelce.
That's why you play it 20 times. It could be worse. There are worse tight ends to own.
Oh, yeah. No, but when you get down to that last slot, you got to nail it, maybe. All right. Yeah. Congratulations on another year with the Almanac, Aaron, and thanks as always for your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys, and I hope people will check out the book.
Very good. Aaron Schatz, A. Schatz, that's S-C-H-A-T-Z, NFL, on Twitter. Zed, another way to say it, Zed.
Sure.
Sal, coming up at 5, the Bills' new alternate uniform and helmet. The big story today. Lines open for your reaction, 803-0550. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WG.
Here's the shock I'm going to give you. The Bills have been generating pressure for years. We have them 5th in pressure rate last year. Now, maybe they're doing it more through scheme, and now it's a different scheme. You know, Leonard does it differently than McDermott did it. But, yeah, they have actually had reasonable pressure. They've been average on sacks and good on pressure rate, despite the fact that they haven't had the guy.
Aaron Schatz with us just a short bit ago from FTN Fantasy. The FTN Football Almanac is out, an annual production of his. He, like many, expect the Bills to be good in 2026. He's calling it.
Despite whatever they're going to wear.
Despite their clothes.
Whenever they're going to wear, whatever they're going to wear.
Have you thought at all, talking about this uniform and reading about it today and hearing reactions, that you might have been surprised to like it? Not based on once you found out what it was going to look like, but just there's a part of me that just I feel like with this kind of thing, I might be hard to impress. And I might think it's, well, I really don't, but, you know, people calling in talking about, why didn't they just do this? Well, whatever that question was, there's an answer to it. Like, they didn't use your idea. And I think this is going over pretty badly today, but I mean, new stuff. Can I get away with this? At the same time, I have no problem with a team's decision to trick up their look. I mean, They're going to sell it. Why not make it? I'm not such a traditionalist that they all have to look like the original six in hockey every night. But I also think, you know, careful if you're messing with a good thing. I mean, the Bills have a classic look that has served them very well for decades. You know, this isn't a green jersey. This isn't complete diversion. As we read from their release, it is It's an already utilized brand color.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, I hate that so much. I feel like now I wish I just not remembered it. But anyway, I mean, it's different. And that is riskier, you know, than just,
yes.
Why didn't they just wear the throwback colors?
It's not that different. I'm just to restate here, I don't know, you know, get the conversation going again. Calls are welcomed at 803-0550 if you want to voice your opinion about this. Nothing about the jersey being revealed today was surprising or jarring because we'd seen it. And I had a half of a percent chance that the whole leak was a ruse and they were going to show us something completely different today. Like there was some chance at 9:30, I was on Twitter waiting. Because I wanted to see, like, is it going to be the thing that I think it's going to be? Or did they just, you know, get everybody mad and here comes, like, the Bruce Smith uniforms or something? Like, I had a little bit of curiosity. I doubted it severely, thus the half of 1% chance or 1% chance that I was willing to give it. The stuff itself, I'm not mad that they didn't go back to the 90s. I'm not mad that they didn't go with a red helmet. I'm not like none of that is to me offensive. You are living in a new era. You're going into a new stadium. I almost I want to say I admire. I definitely respect the effort to do something different. And this is not, to me, I would not use the word. The helmet will take a lot of getting used to. But I don't consider the jersey and the pant, like the uniform itself, an abomination or anything that strong at all. I wouldn't say I love it. It's not my favorite gear that they'll ever wear, but it's not offensive to me. The helmet is jarring, and the helmet doesn't really work with the style of what they came up with. And that's the part that I'm having a hard time from a just purely aesthetic standpoint. My bigger issue was I'd be better off not having read the descriptions and watched the video that just goes so hard at, you know, our blue collar heritage. It just doesn't feel like the time to lean into that when you're moving into a new multi-billion dollar home that costs more than ever for people to go to. The timing is just weird.
You could have leaned into like the rich people. How about a team finally acknowledging the rich people?
Thank God you people could pay for all this stuff. Yeah.
I mean, you're never going to see that.
No.
Just, you know, different is what it's what happens. You know, change is, it's all, you can't fight it too hard, waste your life just fighting against change. But I was watching the Twins recently, the Minnesota, you heard of them? The Minnesota Twins. And I did not ever, I'd never seen them in this new alternate uniform of theirs. And the hat looks like the Marlins to me. It's like black with sort of an M that's shaped like the Marlins M. And
I've seen this and was also, you know, confused is maybe strong, but just like, what's going on there?
And I have seen the Twins somehow like four times in the last month or so. And every time I see them and they're wearing that uniform, I think I'm watching the Marlins. Like it does. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I think you want to avoid, looking like a certain other team.
Right.
But.
And does this not have some Lions-y vibes here, the gray?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The Bills are going to have blue socks. The Lions have gray socks and their gray uniforms. I think they're both really ugly. But, you know, I'm just one person. So I texted Matt Collar at the time, I was watching the Twins, like, you know, did the Twins really want to look like the Marlins? Is that a thing that you would respect if they did? Like, why would you want to look like the Marlins? Just, you know, the hat at least. And he said the simple thing, you know, like we're talking – You pretty much, when you get it right, don't mess with it.
Right.
You think about Kirby Puckett running the bases in the Metrodome after that home run against the Braves. Like, there's your uniform, Twins. And I know you want to sell other ones, but right. Really, right. It's okay to look like that. You know, you don't have to try so hard. And the Bills have a uniform like that where they're immediately recognizable with the helmet. I mean, they're immediately recognizable.
Yeah. And that always is a pull. Really, I think it doesn't matter what age you are. Whatever the thing they were, we went through this with the return of the black and red with the Sabres, because a generation of people, we were working with many of them at the time, they grew up with those, so though they feel as attached to the black and red as we did when we fell in love with the Sabres when we were eight, because they were wearing blue and gold. And so everything becomes, can be new again, or even welcome back and lauded, because some part of the fan base is going to identify with it. That's always going to happen. So I don't need everything to be a revamp or any kind of a refreshing of the classics. Strive to do something new. That's fine. And as much as there's all this noise about this today and maybe for the foreseeable future, I bet they sell a crap ton of this stuff. They always do. The team is going to wear it. I mean, I don't know how sales for the Winter Soldier stuff went last year, the white stuff they wore against New England. But I know what most of the pushback I ever saw about that was after they lost New England in it. And then it became, don't ever wear these again. Whereas if they had beaten New England that day, in some way, shape, or form, we would have loved them.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean,
Again, I like those uniforms.
This is not, me too. This is not a, you know, an across the board. I'm making generalizations, obviously, that don't apply to every single person. But mostly, I think that shapes a lot of it. So what? There's all this pushback that will make a certain kind of fan want to buy it and wear it all the more. Like, shut up, you complainers. You complain about, I'm fine. You've got the wording. I've got the messaging overall with the blue collar stuff. Yeah, I'm always going to find a crack in there to complain. And if you want people like us to shut up, a way that you will, I think, display that is buying this stuff.
Yeah, but we never do. Just know that.
Right.
Out there, if you're that guy.
You
we never do.
You can't win.
We're never going to shut
you
up.
You can't win. You're not going to be. But, you know, until they pull us out of here by our hair.
And somebody else will do the same thing.
Somebody else will be in here doing the same damn thing.
It's a prerequisite.
It's just how it goes. But look, I'm not complaining just to complain. I'm telling you my honest reaction to that video and the wording and the leaning into the blue collar stuff at this moment in time for the franchise just felt, it just didn't land well on me. I'm just one dude and I happen to have a microphone.
Here's Tom with us. Hi, Tom. Tom? No. Jason instead. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Jason. Thank you.
Hey, Bulldog, I totally agree, man. I looked at my phone this morning. I'm getting all these texts from my boys, and they're saying something big's happening. I'm thinking it's got to be a trade or a player. And then I get the text with all the things. It's a New Jersey concept. And I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts. I don't get it. And I don't know, and I was talking to people afterwards, is it a concept because of the color of the new stadium? Is it something that they were thinking about, you know, maybe going forward? You know, the Jets, obviously, they just released their new helmets, whatever, this year. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. Do we get the concept, and do you guys think that this is going to be moving forward in the next couple of years? Thanks so much, guys.
I would think that they're not a one-year alternate, but depends how popular they are. Do I get, like, the Nickel City, it's called the Nickel City uniform. Why is Buffalo the Nickel City? Because 100 years ago, there were nickels with
Buffaloes on them, bisons on
right.
them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't anything specific to this place, but there were nickels with Buffalo, and that was the Buffalo Nickel, and then we were the Nickel City, I guess. You know, that's where Bulldog's, you know, reaction to this, I think, really sort of fits, is if it's a particular extra effort to play up blue-collar traditions and workers and all of that, and sort of like a gray uniform is supposed to align with that. You know, to me, that just seems pretty cheap. And okay, we're the Nickel City because there was a buffalo on a nickel. I mean, no buffalo has ever even been to Western New York. No real one. Statues, I guess, now, but no buffalo has ever roamed this part of the world, to my knowledge. I mean, I've never seen one. You think you're looking at me like maybe I think I'm wrong?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm just waiting to say.
We're Buffalo because the beautiful river.
I see them every day at the zoo, but you know.
Okay. All right. Well, does zoo count? Fine.
Yeah, but they're not. They're not roaming along the interstate like they would be in Wyoming.
No. Yeah. Exactly.
Is that what you were going for? Yeah.
Buffalo is both love. It's beautiful river. That's history lessons today. Maybe I need a couple. Sal's coming up at 5. Camp starts tomorrow. The players report anyway. Practice, the first practice is Wednesday. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, at 803-0550. This is WGR.